It is Friday, May 15th for Patreon subscribers and Saturday, May 16th for the rest of yous. Welcome to Minutes of Sports. I'm Zach Smith, your host, as always. Appreciate everyone being patient with me. I decided about 3 weeks ago to go through this quarantine, no sports. Obviously, still have some content that I want to put out and put out a good show for everyone. But I'm playing with release dates and times and doing the analytics to try to see when I want the show to be consistently moving forward once everything reopens. So thanks for bearing with me. Before I even get started, I got to tell you, I personally am extremely excited. Is play ball in Ohio. Travel baseball is coming. And I know for those of you that are religiously listening to the show, I have a 10-year-old son and an 8-year-old daughter. Both play baseball and softball respectively. And really just excited that they're going to have a season. They're going to get to play. I mean, they've been dying. My son specifically, him and my daughter really, have been dying to play sports and do something, interact with kids. So really excited that is coming. And I'm praying for the health and safety of everyone while we reopen this economy. And I'm sure they will overcomplicate it, and some people will be overly cautious, and to each their own. But I am so excited for my 10-year-old travel baseball player, an 8-year-old softballer, to get out and play. Certainly, they're more likely to get coronavirus from a store or restaurant than a minimal contact outdoor sport, but I think everyone knows my opinion on that. So take me out to the ball game. And as a parent of three, soon to be four, I can tell you they need this. Bad. Let's talk wild about the coronavirus before we get started in the show. The SEC is deciding if players can come back June 1st or June 15th. And meanwhile, LA County has a lockdown that will extend through at least August. So Oregon's not going to have crowds. Basically, the Pac-12 country just decided that relevancy is where they don't want to live. So the SEC schools are going to get back to school June 1st, prepare for a season. And you're going to have Pac-12 schools that, I guess, maybe don't have a season, or it's just a wild time. Or even if they do, they certainly won't have the preparation. So now the gap is widening. Ohio certainly is going to open back up. From what I hear, around June, middle of June, probably the Buckeyes will be back. And I don't know about Michigan. My gosh, that might be the most hated governor in the world. They might just close the program. But I'm going to get into that later. I feel awful for these programs that are closing right now. I mean, Urbana University in Ohio completely closed the whole university. And then Akron just announced they cut three sports. Just terrible, terrible for those athletes. And I feel awful. But before we get to the show, also make sure you check out our website. We're putting out content. We're going to put out a crazy series of articles Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week to really take a look at this NCAA, what half the show is going to be about today. The NCAA is allowing players to get paid for their image and likeness. We're going to really break it down from all sides. It's going to be awesome. I'm really excited about it. So make sure you check that out, menacetosports.com. Also, 100th episode is coming up. This is 98, two more. And coincidentally, our one-year anniversary is May 20th. So that's next Wednesday. We have some amazing ideas. So stay tuned as we finalize it and let you all know our plan for the next week. It's going to be really awesome. So really excited about it. Make sure you just stay tuned. We'll talk about it on those respective shows, obviously. And then do me a favor. Send this. Here's what I want to do. I'm trying to grow this, right? Do me a favor. If you like this show, just hit the little three dots. Copy the link and send it to 2 people, 5 people, 10 people, group chats, whatever. Send it to them and say, hey, you got to listen to this. Just help us grow. I would appreciate it. So, and thank you for doing so for those of you that do. But anyways, all right, enough intro, enough rambling, enough about that. Let's get to the show.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
All right, welcome. Let's kick this thing right off. I'm so excited to talk about this because I think I mentioned it last show. I've been talking to a number of different friends, I guess you'd call it, former colleagues, friends at probably two dozen different schools, trying to wrap my brain around what just happened with the NCAA. And they put out a clarifying statement. Let's start there. They put out a clarifying announcement on what this means, right? it's been all over the news yesterday. The NCAA's top governing body said Wednesday that it supports a proposal to allow college athletes to sign endorsement contracts and receive payment for other work, provided that the schools they attend are not involved in any of the payments. That's huge, because now the schools cannot be involved in it, from my understanding of this, which the best part is no one has a clear understanding, because the NCAA just completely dropped the ball again. Here's why they dropped the ball again. They just announced this was happening with no plan, no guidelines, no way it's going to work. And they announced it to the world. And so now all these schools are scrambling because of one big reason: recruiting. Recruits want to know. Recruits know about it. They read the announcement, and now they're asking about it. And from everyone I've talked to, it's wild. It's changed college football in a way that nothing else ever has. Now kids are talking about it with coaches. Coaches are talking about it with kids. There's no rules, no plan, no way to know what's going to happen. So, and I promise you, here's what's going on. And I know it is, because I talk to people that are doing it. They are employing this. They are using this as a way to get recruits now. That anytime anything happens in the world for a college football coach, immediately they go to, how can I use this in recruiting? The good ones do, at least. I always did. If anything came out, and I mean anything, if a new Drake song came out, immediately my thought was, how can I use this in recruiting? Everything you do as a college coach is, how can I use this in recruiting? So college coaches are right now selling how big their alumni base is, how much money they get in donations, how much money their boosters have. They're selling that to kids, and nothing about it is illegal. I doubt they're saying you're going to make $10 million, but they're showing them that what they can offer, because there's no rule. They brought out this news with no plan or rules. It changed college football forever. And the NCAA couldn't have fucked it up worse. All led by Michael Drake. So if you haven't figured it out yet, this guy is an asshat. He's a clown. He just, just blew up college athletics. Maybe not with, I agree with paying the players. I do. That's my personal opinion. I believe they should be able to do a commercial or monetize their social media. I do believe that. However, I don't believe in just announcing that it's going to be legal with no plan or guidelines and just letting them run amok until you realize, oh, not only did we screw up how we presented this, we don't really know yet, and have no plan, nothing, no leadership. But that's Michael Drake for you. Think about it. Athletes will be able to hire agents, endorse products, do commercials, promotions. They can monetize their social media. It's a whole different ballgame. I mean, these kids, I heard Lee Steinberg, who was the motivation for Jerry Maguire, the movie with Tom Cruise. He's a big-time sports agent. He basically said what they just did is now agents are going to have to go recruit high school kids and try to sign high school kids. Think about that. Sports agents are going to be targeting high school kids, which I guess isn't that shocking. I mean, they kind of already are in basketball, but for a football coach, it's like my mind is blown. Like, you're going to be rolling into schools with a high school kid, and he's going to have an agent sitting there. And you're going to go to a home visit, and you're going to be selling to a kid, his mom, his dad, and his agent as a coach. This has never been seen before. And these agents don't know what they're getting into. The other reality is there is opportunity here like you cannot imagine for someone that knows recruiting, knows the game, has the contacts, and can provide something for these high school kids. Because a sports agent has no idea how recruiting works or any of the sort. Now, they're smart. They'll figure it out. Then they said, the NCAA said, these rule changes will necessarily include the consideration and adoption of safeguards identified earlier to prevent, among all other abuses, NIL opportunities from being used as a recruiting inducement or boosters using NIL opportunities as backdoor pay for play. That's great. It's going to include that, huh? You already announced it. They're already using it in recruiting. If you don't have the rule right now, why did you announce it? This is the issue. And they have zero chance of stopping it. The NCAA knows they have to do this, but there is zero chance they can stop this from being a recruiting tool. It will never not be. If it's not allowed to directly be said, it will be alluded to, right? Inconspicuously driven home. And that will be by the honest schools. The honest schools will still use this, even if you say not to. The others, the SEC, maybe, it would be outright outlined. How? Through trusted intermediaries, high school coaches, mentors, a grown-up who will know the deal off the record, and that info will be shared with the kid. There's no way when this happens, this will not become the biggest recruiting tool in college football. This is it. Kids won't want to talk about anything else. Degrees, real-life preparation, development, they were going to want to see what kind of contract. You see in pro sports, right? Guys leave great teams all the time to go somewhere else to get $180 million in baseball. It happens all the time. And that's going to be recruiting now. And it will be like telling a parent that if their kid goes to the gas station, they will win the lotto, but you're not allowed to tell them that to go to that gas station. It's just wild. And let me tell you this, it is being used right the fuck now. Schools are selling this today. They're driving their value and have been since the minute it hit the news. Typical NCAA. They announced some vague-ass change with no direction and no idea what they just prematurely unleashed. Just imagine the impact of this. Man. The superstars will be plastered everywhere. Nike will now be giving out multi-million dollar endorsement deals. And then, can you imagine if Reggie Bush, Tim Tebow, Vince Young, or Ezekiel Elliott being able to do this in their prime in college? I just think about personally, after the 2014 college football playoff run, Zeke and Cardale would have made millions. You would not have been able to go anywhere in Columbus or in the state of Ohio and not seen Ezekiel Elliott on something. He would have made millions. Let me tell you who is about to win huge. Oregon and Maryland. You're about to see an arms race in recruiting between the big three apparel companies. Nike, Phil Knight, he's been dying for Oregon, his alma mater, to be the next Alabama or to be on the playing field with Ohio State and Clemson. And they've been close, but they've never reached there. Now he can open up his checkbook? Fuck me. It's a wrap. Oregon is going to jump to one of the top tier programs. And Maryland, or Nike's little brother, Under Armour, Kevin Plank? Oh my gosh. He's been trying to do that with Maryland. He's been trying to follow the Phil Knight model at Maryland, and he hasn't been able to get it there over the hump. Now that he can flat pay players, oh boy. I mean, he already had it. Under Armour, them being Under Armour's, you know, whatever, patriarch or their main school, already gave Maryland an edge in recruiting. And Mike Locksley knows how to use it better than anyone, legally too. I mean, they sold Stephon Diggs. They beat us on Stephon Diggs and sold him the dream that he was going to be the Michael Jordan of Under Armour. The kids were going to be wearing Diggs. Like, oh, I got the Diggs 3s, retros. They sold him on it, and it worked. And now Kevin Plank can pay? Boy, oh boy. Watch out. This just got wild. Now, my real question is this. Who does Adidas coin their golden child school? Because you go through who their schools are, they don't have a big player or a favorite, right? In football, at least. Like, okay, Nebraska, maybe. Texas A&M, those are, the two most likely. Maybe Miami, Arizona State, Washington, Mississippi State. Those are the big dogs. They're big hitters. So who does Adidas sink most of their money into? Part of it's going to be the best players, right? Obviously. But then they're going to want one of their schools to be in the playoffs every year. How do they do that? They got to drive money to the players that play for their school. This just opened up Pandora's box and the gates from hell. It is unbelievable. Ladies and gentlemen, buckle the fuck up. Between this ball dropping by the NCAA and news and the transfer portal, college football has become NFL for teenagers. Think about that. Teenagers now are paid athletes, and it's I don't want to say it's different than, you know, a golfer or a tennis pro or a gymnast, because the passion and following and money in college football is unparalleled. The NCAA's biggest concern, their biggest concern right now, is all of the athletes they exploited for years are going to come forward and demand their money. And I don't know if you saw this, NCAA is already pushing to the Senate to protect them. They said, from the direct quote, says, part of the working group's recommended request to Congress was to create an antitrust exemption for the NCAA, or a safe harbor against potential future lawsuits. In my opinion, Congress will not grant this, and the NCAA is so screwed. I mean, royally screwed. They're gonna have a class action lawsuit. I mean, think about what I just said. Those, however, four or five players I mentioned, how much money they would have made, and how much the money the NCAA made off of them. This class action lawsuit is coming. People, here's the other thing. People are also worried about the effect of Title IX. It's going to be a huge effect, right? The NCAA has already made it clear that demand will dictate payment, and schools can't control that. So they're already saying that's not fair. If companies want to pay someone X amount, and whether it's a boy or a girl, doesn't matter. But talking about Title IX, this pandemic has exploited Title IX to the fullest, because schools, specifically smaller schools, are closing programs and will be cutting a ton of sports. Not only because of financial concerns, but then they have to cut the small sports, like the non-revenue gaining sports. And unfortunately, most women's sports don't make as much money. So if they're going to cut one women's sport, they got to cut a men's sport. And then where do you stop the bleeding, right? They're trying to equate things financially on their balance sheet and trying to equate things gender-wise for Title IX. Think Akron announced it. Men's golf, women's tennis, and men's cross country just got announced. They got cut. They're out. Unbelievable. I'm telling you, this is wildest. I mean, there's never been a wilder time in the history of college athletics ever. Between the pandemic, paying players, and the transfer portal. I mean, it's just like, whoa. Like, hope you enjoyed last fall. You're never going to see it like that ever again, right? And well, this fall, you'll see the season like that. Well, you know you won't. Not because of the pandemic. There might not be a person in the stands. And then how about the other news? The Giants corner DeAndre Baker and Seattle corner Quentin Dunbar were issued an arrest warrant in Miramar because they allegedly lost $70,000. They got hustled. They lost $70,000 at a party. So they roll back up at this barbecue, come in with semi-automatics and threatened everybody, stole money and watches, $73,800 worth, which good for them, made a profit. They got interest on the $70,000 they lost. The reality is this, they got hustled out of $70,000 and decided that shit wasn't going to fly. How dumb can you be? Honest to God. Street justice and image. Idiotic and lethal concepts to buy into when you have so much going for you. The list of dumbass, quote-unquote, thugs that have done shit like this and pissed away their lives and future earnings and freedom is asinine. Forget the $70,000. Your dumbass shouldn't have been with the people that took the $70,000. And if it happened with people that you thought were good people, call the cops and don't throw away your life. Or just say, screw it. I make millions, 70K. I learned my lesson. The craziest part about all of it, though, to me, was Quentin Dunbar, right? Just got traded to Seattle for a fifth round pick. And everyone was like, oh, the Redskins, they really, you know, undersold him, or they undervalued him. They didn't get what they should have got. Shit. They got a fifth round pick. Seattle got nothing. But he had a video conference with reporters yesterday morning, right after, or I guess, yeah, yes, Thursday morning. Right after it happened. It happened in the early hours of Thursday morning, so Wednesday night. And then he had a video conference with reporters and listened to what he said. After just taking semi-automatic rifles and robbing a party, listen to what he said in his press conference. Listen to this.
You just want to feel wanted at the end of the day. So, you know, them guys made their job to trade for me, and that's good enough for me. And I just hope to repay them with, you know, the way I carry myself as a person.
Well, Quentin, payment rejected. How you carry yourself as a person did not repay them. You already went bankrupt, my friend. Wow. I mean, I've never heard of anything. I mean, yes, I have. That's not true. But I just can't. I can't fathom it. I really can't. The other news before we get to the second segment of the show, my guy, Gordon Gee, the biggest loss to Ohio State University that I can remember. I mentioned before, every aspect of Ohio State was negatively impacted by him being dismissed, starting with the doctors or the hospital. I mean, they Ohio State lost a good one. And I'm not here to debate whether it was rightfully so or not, but they replaced him with an absolute ass clown. And Gordon Gee said, we will have college football this fall, even if I have to suit up and play. Compare that to Michael Drake and his leadership. That's good for him. Good. We better have college football, and I'm with you. Maybe no crowds, but they can play football. I promise. It's necessary. I don't want to say everyone will be okay. It's necessary, right? And if people don't want to play, don't play. That's my opinion. But unbelievable. And speaking of, though, commencement happened, right? When the fuck is Michael Drake going to get out of Columbus? I'll tell you this, whenever it is far, far overdue. Wish he would have never stepped foot in this state, because he's done more harm for the game, for athletics, and The Ohio State University than any president before him. What a legacy. And I'm not an expert on his academic prowess. What he actually has done good things for the academic growth, I believe. But it's about the entire picture, totality, Michael. Did you make everything better? You didn't make the hospital better. I don't care what they say. You lost some of the most prolific doctors and researchers in the world. A lot of them to West Virginia, where Gordon Gee is. So the hospital, no. The academics, I believe he made better. Athletics, certainly not. I mean, you couldn't have destroyed them worse, or you couldn't have made a stronger negative impact. You really couldn't have. Oh, I could go on forever. I'm not going to bore you with that, though. But I could go on about that guy forever, because he's done so much harm to Ohio State, and it pains me to watch it. And I'm just so excited for him to get the hell out of town. So this segment is So You Want to Be a Coach. And I've done one segment like this before. Some of these stories I've told a little bit about, but I really want to talk about it, because here's the motivation for it. As I was deciding what to do in this episode and in the next two episodes, I've had dozens, maybe 100 people that have reached out to me just for advice on they want to become a college football coach and what they have to do. And my answer is pretty uniform across the board, is you probably don't really want to. I mean, if you might be one of the rare ones that really, really wants to, because it's all about, you could say one thing, but can you do it? The commitment it takes to get into college coaching is insanity. It's an insane level. I mean, it's most people would be like, that's not even worth it. And it's, I mean, I could make an argument for both, but it's really hard. And so I wanted to talk about just my journey in the early stages of breaking into it. And granted, I will say this right now, I had a leg up because of my grandfather. Everyone knows that. Now, I'll fight anyone with actual facts and opinions by those who are in the industry that had anything to do with the rise of my career. He got me my foot in the door, right? He got my foot in the door, and he added to my story when it came to marketing myself as a coach, right? But at the end of the day, no coach is getting hired just because of a marketed story. Coaches get hired in big time college football because of their value, the value they bring, right? But I wanted to talk about just the life of a GA and breaking into the coaching world. And I'll say this, it was an absolute grind. I had no idea what I was getting into. I thought of myself as a hard worker, but when I started doing it, I was like, holy shit. I went down to Florida as I started at Kentucky as an unpaid, you know, just kind of a volunteer, very minimal hours. I helped them enter stuff in film. They didn't really utilize me at all. And I just made me do busy work, which was fine. I just wanted to have it on my resume and try to learn something, which I didn't learn a thing. So I get down to Florida and I was an unpaid intern, right? I had to take out student loans. I mean, I don't know how much. I think $100,000 in student loans over the 5 years I was there. That's about right. Probably $100,000 in student loans. Didn't get paid first I didn't get paid anything. And then when I finally took the GA job, they gave you something like $200 every 2 weeks, or I think it was $179 every 2 weeks. That was your pay. So you had to take out loans to live. So anyways, I get there, I'm an intern, and convenient enough, right? Urban's the head coach, obviously. Just think about the staff that we had, right? Steve Adazio, head coach. Dan Mullen, head coach. Charlie Strong was a head coach. Who else? Greg Madison, who's a D coordinator at Ohio State. And then who else was on that staff when we first got there? Oh, it was wild. And then the kicker of it all, I was an intern to the director of football operations, which is basically the guy that just makes everything work. He's like the guy behind the scenes that just makes it all happen, right? And so I was his assistant. What does that mean? Well, that means we have a cookout. I'm the one that's cleaning up all the plates and shit afterwards, and tearing down tents and tearing, you know, just doing intern work. That was half of my job. The other half of my job is I was the offensive GA's intern, and I got to work, kind of hang out with the receivers. I wouldn't even say when I first got there, I didn't work with them, but that offensive GA happened to be none other than Ryan Day. So I got to work with Ryan Day as he's a GA, learn from him. And you talk about a mentor and somebody that I learned a ton from, and somebody that gave me perspective outside of the Dan Mullen offensive staff that we worked for, right? So Ryan and I worked close together. I was like his little errand boy assistant, whatever you want to call it. I did anything he asked. I was thoroughly impressed with him and how he did things. And I just knew that's how I wanted to be when I got in, you know, got my chance to be a GA or whatever. And it's funny story. Ryan still, well, I don't know if he does, he probably doesn't anymore because he probably doesn't want to talk about me, but I don't blame him. But he used to tell the story all the time to GAs and interns at Ohio State when I was with him. And even before that, he had told me about the things that I did as an intern and someone, you know, whatever, an assistant, and how impactful it was. And that is why I got to where I got. And the first example he always used was a quick story. Back in 2005, you know, I was up in the coach's booth with Ryan Day, up in the booth with Dan Mullen, the offensive coordinator. Up there, it is a completely different world than on the field. On the field, it is like kind of controlled chaos. You can't see anything as a coach because of your angle of perspective. You're looking flat at players. You can't see the picture. You can see minimal things. And then to top that off, you go up in the box where I spent my first 5 years, and it is like calm, quiet. It's almost like playing a video game strategically without controlling the players actually, right? You're seeing everything. You're visualizing it. You're calling plays. And so it's just a very, very different world up there. And it was a shock for me. My first game on the field was Cincinnati, the bowl game in Sugar Bowl, 2009 Sugar Bowl. Billy Gonzalez had left. More on that. He had left, so I coached the receiver. So I was down on the field in that game, and it was like I didn't know what to do because I couldn't see anything. I was so unused to it. But anyway, so I'm with Ryan Day. So we have to give information to Dan Mullen in between series, right? So an offensive coordinator calls the plays. He's calling the plays. He has his list of plays, different things he can do. It's kind of like he's playing chess, right? He's a strategic mastermind trying to attack the defense. So he's calling plays. And then after the series, he wants to know, all right, what happened? Because he could see a lot, but he can't see it all. So then you try to piece together what happened that entire series, what they did, what we did, what happened each play, and what was our plan the next series, right? So it's constantly you're locked in and evaluating, studying, watching, charting, and then boom, it stops and you're analyzing, reanalyzing everything. Then you start over. It's crazy how it's so sequential and so blocks. It's like blocks. 1 minute you're doing this, the next minute you're doing that. So I created this Excel sheet, and it's part of what, I don't have the Excel sheet anymore, but I did it my whole career then for everything. And it's part of, I know it's overdue, but the coach's toolbox that I've been talking about forever. It's almost done. My issue is I have to take logos and everything off of every document so that I don't get sued by some university. So it's going to be ready, but I would develop these spreadsheets that could do crazy things, right? I learned Excel in depth when I was an intern because it just fascinated me. So I would use these crazy formulas that all we had to do was type in the play call, run or pass, and the defense, and then I could spit out reports, basically sheets of paper, and give them Dan Mullen that would tell him like run pass ratio overall, run pass ratio after an incomplete pass, what he does after a negative yardage play or a sack. And it was really self-evaluation, right? Letting Dan Mullen see what he's been calling, because they see it, and if they see a tendency, they're going to attack that tendency. So he's trying to make sure he doesn't have a tendency, right? Oh, I'm getting worked up about it because this is my passion, right? So I developed the spreadsheet. It was insane. So every game I would lug this laptop, this huge printer, all this stuff up to the press box, set up this, what looked like a Microsoft headquarters back in the 80s, right? Like just like big computers, big things. And it was all legal because we weren't filming the game. We weren't using film. It was just my Excel spreadsheet and my brain with Ryan's vision and input were combining this thing to give Dan Mullen like live analytics, which no one in football was doing at the time in 2005, not in college at least. And in the NCAA or in the NFL, it's all legal. Everything, videoing and everything. So then we go to a game at Vanderbilt, and someone from Vanderbilt staff kind of walks by and sees all the equipment that we have. And they immediately, after the game, we killed them, of course. They called the NCAA, and the NCAA started investigating what I was doing. And so open book, open doors, gave them everything, gave them the program, showed them what we were doing. I had already met with our compliance people. I knew it was legal. And so they were like, yeah, it's legal. You can do it. And that was in 2005 and 2006. Then right after the championship game in 2006, we win the national championship. The NCAA puts out a rule that you can't have printers or laptops in the box, in the booth. That was my first rule. It's the Ryan and I used to call it the Zach Smith rule. Because of my spreadsheet, because it was unfair, but it was legal. So I made career out of finding those loopholes to gain an edge, because that's what coaching and recruiting and everything is. It's finding a way to legally do what you're trying to do, but do it differently. So that's what we did. That was one story that I thought was is a funny story. But then, so I did that. And then as I transitioned out of being an intern, I graduated undergrad from Florida. And then I had a one-year window. Ryan Day was gone. And I had a one-year window before I was going to be able to take the offensive GA job. So I didn't know what I was going to, obviously I was going to work at Florida in the football office, but I didn't know what my capacity would be. And then Urban kind of challenged me one day to become his special teams assistant. Basically, there's no GA for special teams. No one, just the assistant coaches and the head coach. Urban ran special teams. He wanted me to be his right-hand man, like do all the scouting reports, breakdowns, and all that stuff. And so I was prideful about that job. So I did that, probably 80% of the time. And the other 20% of the time is he wanted me to start doing recruiting graphics, like on Photoshop. So I went, so this is what I did. This is my decision, right? I said, all right, if he wants me to be a graphic guy, I'm going to become the best that I can, the best I can be. So I go on YouTube every night, probably 3 hours a night for I don't know how long, and just start learning Photoshop. Hindsight, I guess I didn't really have money, but hindsight, I should have taken a course or something or did an online course, but I just went to YouTube and watched tutorials on how to do Photoshop. And I learned it. I learned Photoshop and I became pretty good at it. I mean, for a football coach, I was probably, I would say I was the best Photoshopper that ever coached football. How about that? That's the title I'll give myself. So I did that. And that will lead to my next NCAA rule that came about. So I was always trying to look, we did these graphics on these cards because you could only send cards to recruits. You couldn't send graphics, pictures. Now that's since been, they just finally said, screw it, do what you want. So my thing was, how do we get graphics to players? I mean, how do we get cool looking graphics to players? Well, the one loophole was a camp brochure. Camp brochures had zero restrictions at that time. It was just like whatever you want. And we were always sending out literally it was printed in the office on a normal inkjet printer, like these pieces of paper with our camp information. And I went to Urban and I was like, hey coach, here's what I'm thinking. Why don't we make like a big camp brochure? Like it expands and folds out into a big poster, crazy graphics. And he was like, I don't know what you mean. And so I was like, I'll show you. So I went and just designed this. It was 8 pages total. It opened all the way up to a huge poster. It was a badass graphic. I mean, for the time and for my skill set. And I printed it off on paper, taped it all together, and I took it in and showed it to him. And he was just like jaw dropped, like, holy shit, that's insane. And then him and I walked to the compliance director, Jamie McCleskey, and we went in there and he said, is this legal? And Jamie looked at it, went to the rule book, read it again. He was like, yeah, I mean, there's no rules on it. You can do it. So we blasted these out to everyone in the country, and every other school was livid. Like, how the hell can they do this? And it's like, you dumbass, read the rule book. We can do it. You just didn't think of it. So we did it. And then camp brochures immediately after that summer started getting restrictions. And they were still allowed to do stuff, but it was completely unrestricted until we did it. And it's just so funny how I got two rule changes, two rules in the rule book that I helped, bring about. So anyways, I did that for a year. And then I moved into the GA room. And the advice that I would give anyone out there that wants to become a coach is advice that Urban gave me. And that was, if you're going to do something, be innovative, be creative, right? And when you hand someone something that you did, that's your work, that has your name on it, hand it to them and inside your head say, fuck you. That's the best shit you've ever seen. That's what you should say. That's what he told me. And I did it every day. Every day I did something, I said, you know what? I'm trying to blow Urban Meyer's mind with whatever this is. And I did it dozens of times over the years because it was all about, all right, I'm going to impress the shit out of him, right? That's what you're trying to do. Impress your boss. And then maybe he'll help you down the road. And that's what I did. And he did. He helped me get jobs. And then I ultimately hired me. So then I become the GA, and then we had two different tenures, right? That in my GA hood, my first year, I think it was a year. It might've been two. No, I think it was 1 year. Nope. 2 years. So my first 2 years I was with Dan Mullen. Right? Dan Mullen tenure, who's now the head coach at Florida, and his tenure, he was a complete bully. And I've talked about him before. I'm not going to rehash my feelings on Dan Mullen. He was a complete bully. He had his protege, Angelo Miranda, worked with me, who is a friend of mine. Like, I have no hard feelings towards Angelo. He's a good coach, good dude, who Mullen later threw under the bus and ruined his whole career at Mississippi State for a recruiting violation. So that's what a way to treat your protege, right? And Dan despised me. He fucking hated me. He would never challenge me. But he treated everyone like shit. I'm talking about, he treated Stan Drayton like shit. He got Stan Drayton run out of there because he just didn't like him. I think he just needed somebody to, he could talk down to, and Stan was not that guy. He was a great coach, really smart, sharp, and fucking tough. So Dan didn't like that. There was some pushback because he couldn't just verbally abuse him. But he despised me. Now, he would never challenge me because I had a kind of a group of friends there that were like we were the young guys that, like, we would beat the shit out of him. I don't know that I would have, but some people that I worked with would have beat the shit out of him if he would have fucked with us, like genuinely. And I think he also despised me because I got my foot in the door through my grandfather. And Dan was a D3 tight end, just an awful football player. He was a career GA. I think he was a GA for like 7 years or so, 6 years or something like that, before he finally got his first crack at a job, which is a testament to him for having that, you know, perseverance to push through all those years of not getting hired or getting jobs. And then Urban hired him, and he rode Urban's coattails. And I've said it before, brilliant football coach, but he's a fucking dick. I mean, he is a bully, and I've heard he's not as much anymore. So maybe he actually thinks he's got a more positive self-image, has a little more self-confidence. So now he doesn't have to bully people as much. But when he was a coordinator who hadn't really done anything, he was a bully. And so that's about all I'm going to talk about that tenure. But I learned a lot of football, didn't really have any input, no voice. He hated me. Billy Gonzalez, like everyone else, thought I did a good job. No one else had any hard feelings or negative feelings towards me except Dan for whatever reason. And I think that's why. So then he gets a Mississippi State job. After we win it all in 2008, Steve Adazio takes over as the coordinator. And my role completely changed. Somehow, I think through my grandfather, and Steve is an Italian. He's family guy. He believes in helping people and bringing along mentees. And he became a huge mentor for me. And my role completely changed at Florida when he took over the reins, and for a number of reasons, because it's crazy for me how comparable that 2009 offensive staff was to the 2015 offensive staff at Ohio State. And everyone that has listened to the show knows my opinion on that. But for very different reasons. Steve was not incompetent at all. He was a brilliant football coach, a great football coach. He was an O-line coach. He didn't know the pass game great. So he needed a strong counterpart that could kind of run the pass game while he ran the run game. And then they could come together to run the offense, right? That's what he needed. Well, we brought in Scott Leffler to replace Dan Mullen. And Scott is a great football coach, a good friend of mine. And Scott just had a very philosophical differences from Urban Meyer on the offense. And so they butted heads a lot. And so he was never out of alignment with Steve. I mean, you could see that because Steve hired him at two different places after that. But there was not great alignment on that staff, especially in the pass game, because Scott was in left field, Urban was in right field, Billy G was the receiver coach. He really had no interest in anything to help Steve at all. And so it became Steve looking around like, I need guys that can help me. I mean, one man cannot do this. And so he turned to myself and Justin Fry, who was his former player and O-line GA. And he relied on us for everything. I mean, we did game plans as a staff, but when it came to in-game, it was insane. I mean, no one would really help. No one had much to say. No one had ideas because Leffler knew what plays he would want to call against what was going on, but they weren't our offense. They were his offense. And so there was a disconnect there. Billy G was on the field, couldn't see much, didn't really have much input usually on game day anyways, because you can't from the field. So Steve was looking for help. So I'll never forget, we played, I think it was Kentucky. Justin Fry, I have to call Justin Fry. He'll tell me. We played, I'll say it was Kentucky, and I vividly remember Justin called a touchdown play. He said, Steve, they're giving us this. Call this play. Steve called it. It went like 70 yards for a touchdown. I did that twice also in that game. We came back in on Sunday. I'm feeling like I am the king of the castle. Like I'm a GA at Florida, top five team, just won two national championships, and I'm helping call touchdowns, dude. Like I'm going to make it. I'm big time. We came in on Sunday. I'm thinking, let's get to work, man. Let's game plan. I feel like a coordinator. And then the bottom fell out. Urban was livid at Justin Fry and I for help, for talking so much and calling all those plays. Even though Steve is the coordinator, is telling us to do it. He's livid. And the reason why, I can tell you the psychological reason why, and then I'll tell you what happened. The reason why is he was livid at the full-time coaches for not doing what we were doing, right? For not calling the plays and helping out and game planning and having a voice. They weren't doing it. And he, I'll never forget the quote he said in an offensive staff meeting. He said, no, he looked at me and Justin Fry and he said, you two shut your fucking mouth. I don't ever want to speak, hear you speak again. He was like, and I want to know what these other five guys, what the fuck do I pay you for? I mean, you got about $1 million in salary here. What am I paying you for? If these two nobodies with no salary, I don't pay them shit. They're calling the plays. What do I pay all you for? And I mean, you talk about going from king of the castle to the freaking guy scrubbing the basement. I was like, boom, crashed down to reality. I almost quit. I would have quit. I was ready to quit. I was going to walk in and tell him to fuck himself. I'm just trying to help and do the best I can. And don't talk to me like that ever again. And Steve, I went into Steve to tell him I was doing it. And Steve talked me off the ledge. He was like, don't do that. Don't do that. It'll be fine. Just steady in the boat. Don't do that. And so that's what happened. In 2009 was an epic failure for Florida football. I'm not saying it was because Justin and I were told to shut the fuck up, but it was because there was not a great solid offensive staff. And Justin and I were part of the solid part. We were helping, we were doing things. So Florida fans, if you want to know what happened in 2009, there's your answer. There's your answer right there. And same thing happened in 2015. So different coaches though. So you can, I think the finger points at one person in that instance, right? It's the leader, the guy that hired the coaches and led the coaches. And you know, it is what it is. That's, you gotta have big shoulders to be a head coach. So it falls on the head duck, needless to say. So I just wanted, that was kind of part one of this. So you want to be a coach, or kind of part two. I already did it once, told some stories, but that was part one of this series. I'm going to do a second part next week for the 99th episode. Really excited about it. I have a bunch more I want to talk about and just tell stories just to kind of give, I want to give you guys perspective one inside the coaching world, but also for people that want to get into it or thought they wanted to get into it. I want to give you a vivid picture of what it's like for a football coach, right? A college football coach, and my journey to become a position coach at Ohio State, which I think everyone that coaches football would aspire to do. Just don't fuck it up like I did, please. So anyways, that's all I got for you today. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you were entertained. Make sure follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Coach Zach Smith. Please do that right now, and follow Menace to Sports on both. And that's all I got for you. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you liked it. If you didn't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my